Revolution Radio proudly presents live from Phoenix, Arizona, the Truth Deny Talk Radio with host Roxy Lopez. Join us here for topics you won't hear about on mainstream news, such as chemtrails, GMOs, nutrition, and conspiracy facts regarding your personal sovereignty. Humanity is 7 billion strong. We are the majority. And now, live from the Valley of the Sun, your host, Roxy Lopez. And good evening, everybody. Welcome to another live Tuesday evening show, live from Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to The Truth Denied, and I am your host, Roxy Lopez. Today is February 19th, 2013. And I swear to God, the next time I come on here, it's going to be December 19th, 2013. The year's already flying by. You all have a really big interest in my guest that I'm about to bring on. We rarely do it, but we did an event page on Facebook and invited you, and you know, quite a few of you showed up, and so many questions you have. So let's give our guest at least the first hour to let you all know who they are, what they do. Both of my guests run an organization called ISA Act, and ISA Act stands for International Center Against Abuse of Covert Technologies. And this is a very big topic these days, and I think I know why. The amount of individuals or the victims or the abused, whatever you want to call it, it seems like they are growing in numbers. And they're starting to report it, which is why ISA Act was opened up to assist. You know, ISA Act is an independent, nonprofit human rights organization. And they work together with a number of NGOs, civil rights movements, and human rights groups. ISA Act was created to obtain evidence of serious human rights abuses for victims of electronic terrorism worldwide. It sounds out there, but I'm telling you, the longer I know these two gentlemen and the more that I look at their work, I'm starting to really come to the realization that this is terrible, awful. And they're going to explain everything to us. And they don't just have bad news for us. They have good news for us, too. Mr. Jesse Beltram is from Sacramento, California. And he is a retired Sacramento City firefighter paramedic, educated by one of the premier paramedic training facilities in the United States, METS, for any of you who know that, Matt. He has a reputation of producing some of the top performing paramedics in the nation under the professorship of Rodney Shimamoto. So he will be on the show this evening. And of course, we're going to have his partner, Lars Drudgaard. And Lars is from Denmark, Europe, and he has worked in many fields of sound engineering and radio, TV broadcast stations, et cetera, but he has a story, as well as Jesse does, why they are now involved in ISA Act. So first, may I please welcome to the show Jesse Beltram. How are you?
Hi, Roxy. How are you?
I'm great.
As always, love to be on your show, and we thank you for the opportunity.
Hello? It's me. I am sorry. We're back on the air.
Okay. Are we on the air?
Yes.
Okay, we're back on the air. All righty then. So I was trying to figure out if I was on the air, so I just, you know, kept talking for a little bit. It's all good. We're back on. So I was just about to introduce my pal, Lars Drudgaard. Welcome to the show, Lars.
Hi, Roxy. It's Jesse. I don't believe Lars is quite back yet.
All right. Lars isn't back yet. That's okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, Jesse, why don't we start here? We're all used to this, and like you say, with your this type of topic. Now I've got the owner of Revolution saying alarms are going off. What happened? I don't know what he means by alarms. I have no idea. I don't know what he's talking about. But anyway, obviously something really crazy just happened, and the public is saying they can't hear anything yet. So somebody's hearing a completely different show, I guess. They're posting. They don't even hear us. So that's really strange.
Interesting.
Yeah. Hold on a second. Let me find out if anyone's hearing our show. Okay. Melanie is listening out in Europe. Melanie, can you hear us? Are we live now on the Truth in iTalk Radio? She can hear us. Okay, I'm going to go with that, because if she can hear us, that means everybody else can hear us. So, Jesse, let's start over. So, ISAC, you know, I was so intrigued when I met you in the very beginning. You were obviously, you have a story of your own, something that occurred with you in your life, which I think became the cause and the reason for opening up ISAC, and as well as Lars. Do you want to just give us a brief summation of what happened to you?
Yeah, real quickly. I'm a retired Sacramento City firefighter, paramedic, and many years, well, a few years back, I was a witness to a murder, and the murder was committed by law enforcement in front of this individual's 4 or 5 year old daughter. After he was severely beaten to death, I was asked to revive him and save his life. But the long story short of it, he lost his life that day. And we tried to report it and to our superiors, and we were told to keep our mouth shut. We were told not to say a thing because we would be blacklisted or something terrible would happen to us. There were photographs and video of the incident, and I was young and naive and not understanding. I thought we were doing the right thing by telling the truth and saying what, reporting what had happened. And it came back to haunt me. I was knocked. I went to a dental appointment and I was put unresponsive without consent. And when I awoke, I began to hear what was I can describe is a high-frequency 60-cycle whine or an audio emission near my right TMJ area or my ear. And being that my background was also in IT, I was part owner of one of the third largest internet service providers in the state of California there in that time. And we did various programming development and worked on wireless technologies. So I was familiar that this was a foreign emission, and I sat out to prove what I believe had happened, and obtain medical images. Met a gentleman by the name of Dr. John Hall, who is the author of a book called A New Breed: Satellite Terrorism in America, who was writing about this phenomenon that was happening across the United States at an alarming number. I met him in Austin, Texas. He brought some equipment and did what's called an RF scan, and sure enough, at that right TMJ area, it was a positive reading. It coincided with the medical images, and it was then that I felt comfortable enough to go public with what was happening. And apparently, it was happening at an alarming rate and alarming numbers throughout the United States. Particular hotspots were Florida, New York, the East Bay here in California, and down in Texas. And I asked Dr. Hall, I go, why isn't anything done? Why isn't anyone being held accountable? And he said, because it's a crime that in most cases, most people are labeled as having some type of mental disorder, whether it be schizophrenia, delusional, null disorder, or anything like that. So I said, well, I decided to come up with an objective way so that we can prove that this was happening. And so we started doing preliminary radio frequency scanning for the possibility of emissions coming from the human body. And that's how ISACT was started. And then we were on an international call. I was invited to an international call. Lars Rugard and some of the colleagues he was speaking with, we formed ISACT and started doing it internationally and with some really striking results. And Lars can probably give his summation.
Yep. My story started 2009 when I applied for a job in Defense Intelligence Service in Denmark. And after a very short period after I sent off my application, I got the impression that I was under surveillance. And in the beginning, I wrote it off as being probably a background check or something. But after I was rejected for the job, the surveillance actually continued. And that is when I slowly started to worry about it. And it wasn't until later this spring, I sent off the application in January. And during spring, it increased. And basically, it turned into extreme torture sessions during the summer of 2009. I wasn't aware what was going on in the beginning, except that I was 100% sure this was man-made, it was artificial, and that I was being targeted in this way. I'm actually, because of my job application to the military intelligence service, I started to look under surveillance and all kinds of different topics relating to intelligence services. I didn't find anything about it. It wasn't until I read an article in The Examiner by Deborah Dupree, where I got in contact with one of the people who commented on her articles, a gentleman from Sweden called Magnus Olsson, who's written a lot of stuff on his webpage, mindcontrol.se. And through that, I got in touch with the international community, and together with Magnus, we started an international call. And after a year or so, Jessica came online with this testing proposal, and he was going to do it in the US. And I said, okay, send over the equipment to Europe, and I'll do it in Europe. And that's how we got started.
Oh, my goodness. And what year was that, Lars?
I was initially targeted in 2010, and I think we started 2011. We started ISACT.
Oh my, this is recent, very recent. And either one of you, Jesse, I'm sure the audience would like to know: do you feel that either one of you is still being targeted, or how does that go?
Well, I would. The answer to that is yes, and it basically I would describe it as torture. It's a 24/7 nonstop emission that quite frankly I don't know how most people could tolerate it, and a lot of people are dysfunctional because of it. We have doctors, we have lawyers, we have former prosecutors, politicians, people from all walks of life who we encounter who are having issues with this. We've taken it a step further. Not only have we done the RF testing, I mean, we've been able to utilizing a Doppler ultrasound, actually record the signal that was normally diagnosed as tinnitus or ringing in the ears from individuals, and record it utilizing a Doppler, and you can actually hear the frequency. And in fact, Roxy, I don't know if this is a time to bring it up, but
absolutely, please do. I think it was very interesting.
Yeah, we just to demonstrate that, you know, ISACT, we're about objectivity, having objective evidence, and something that's tangible that people can either see, touch, feel, hear, whatever it may be, utilizing our senses that we use to judge what is really happening in reality. And we sent you over that audio recording, and you heard what that was like. And you know, and I ask you, you know, what would it be like if you were listening to that 24/7, 365 days a year, coming in with no one believing you? You going to a physician, and they're just saying it's just ringing in your ears. The interesting thing is when we did this and we conducted this, and we've had many patients who we've been able to record this from utilizing the Doppler. And when we showed it to a neurologist and we said, you know, can you tell us what tinnitus is? And then when we demonstrated it to him, he says, that's not tinnitus. And I said, well, what would you diagnose this as? And he says, you have to diagnose it as a sound emission coming from the human body. And now they're in a quandary. So you can't call it tinnitus anymore. We're coming up with the evidence. And this is happening to many people who are and either being overdosed with psychiatric meds that don't help them or just basically written off.
Yeah, you know, I think there is, and we can get into this more, what the difference is between somebody who may very well be mentally disturbed, and then there are those who are being targeted who are not mentally disturbed, but because of the effects of this type of emissions. And by the way, listeners, yes, Jesse did send me a 2-minute soundbite, and it's horrible. And then when we were going to play it for you on the show, and we're not going to do that now because I sent it over to Hawk, who everyone knows is the owner of Revolution, and his cats. The cats ran out of the room, and Hawk actually got dizzy because he is an epileptic. And so then we decided, well, what is this? And so Hawk analyzed it, and I find it interesting that I think, Jesse, you thought it was at 60 cycle?
Well, I call it a 60 cycle because my background in IT, you can sometimes hear this frequency be emitted when you're around electronics. And it's the only thing that I knew that I could relate to. What Hawk described was a little more definitive because of his background in sound engineering and that type of technical expertise. When he explained it, why we probably don't want to play this over the air, I never thought about it, and I was quite intrigued because the fact is he says it's actually an emission that's the frequency carrier is transmitting at point or 99991 hertz, and that embedded within it is digital code, which means it would basically be transmitted at a subconscious level to someone, and he was concerned that this may trigger someone to do something that they would not be aware of, or we would have some consequences. We may or may not have, but it's a little bit more information that Lars and I did not have that we have now even further, because it opens up a whole plethora of opportunities here, and we're quite excited about what we found serendipitously today.
Absolutely, and it's perfect timing. And I must say that, you know, if this, it's the sound of the actual recording, there is a sound, and it's high pitched and it's annoying. But what Hawk was saying, that underneath that sound, and he showed me as well, and he showed you as well, Jesse, the digital coding that's in it. And that's no coincidence. And then it's kind of a funky number, 999.1 hertz. I mean, I think that's just really interesting and quite coincidental, not to get all sinister, but it brings up a valid point that adds to your arsenal of proof, because it shows one more step that we should not be having the human body emitting this kind of code and signal and sound. So what could possibly be the explanation for that? Would you think that perhaps the individual who's been falsely diagnosed with tinnitus could possibly have a chip that's emitting some type of code or has something that flips it on and flips it off?
Well, that's the interesting thing. In these particular cases, and with this one particular, there's corresponding medical imagery that shows a cylinder-type object in the TMJ area, which is basically the jaw joint. You have a positive radio frequency scan, preliminary scan, and a post-preliminary scan which we'll talk about, which is our phase three process that we started in Europe. And then now you have a Doppler ultrasound that was able to record this emission in that same location. It's kind of hard for someone to say that these particular individuals are delusional or have a some type of mental disorder, particularly because they've been evaluated by psychologists and given a clean bill of health, been reports saying that they're of sound mind, with no pun intended there. But that is the proof that we're coming forth with.
Wow, that's just amazing. And Hawk, by the way, just Skyped me and said he rechecked and he has a better filter and it has come out 9999 hertz.
Yeah,
that soundbite.
Yeah.
I don't know if you just saw that. But anyway, yeah. So that clears that up. And then as far as sound mind and so forth, as you said, and this isn't the only game in town with this, is there? I mean, there's so much more going on than and I guess my question would be to both of you, how do you personally, when you take on a member, you know, when you set out, you and Lars and your organization set out to help somebody, how do you discern the difference between somebody who needs a different kind of help than what you have to offer?
Go ahead, Lars.
Yeah. Basically, we know that there's a script that almost 99% of all victims around the world are being run through the same script. And just basically listening to the story will easily discern whether or not they are victims of this particular system.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. And if there were, let's say, other reasons for their tormenting, well, they wouldn't have this exact script and everything in the same order and timeline, etc. It's very easy.
Oh, my goodness. So is that part of the program, do you think? In other words, that everyone has the same script. Is that part of the programming?
Yes, it is. It's actually those who are running the program are running it through a very, very tight script or manual, if you like. And it's only adapted very lightly towards to fit into the individual's personal surroundings, basically, and personal situation. Mm-hmm. There are a few variations on this, but the general script is still the same. There are some who are tortured more physically as well, with microwave weapon systems, and others are more or less only kept in the psychological trauma phase. But if you go and see if there would be other reasons for those symptoms, they would have completely different symptoms. So it's very easy for us to discern.
Yeah, and Roxy, and I put up a link to...
If you're just joining us, our guests are Jesse Beltran and Lars Dredgaard from ISACT. And Lars, you were just beginning to talk about the Barry... Or was it you, Jesse?
Yeah, I
was Barry Trower video. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just following up with what Lars had to say describing the script. Barry Trower, who is a physicist and a British scientist, former military microwave specialist who has been going around the globe and talking about the dangers of exposure to various types of radio frequencies. In the link that we just put up, he describes the script that Lars speaks of in detail, step by step, and he talks about the various reasons as to why this would happen to someone. In his particular position, he describes how this was used against those who were protesting against their governments. They were utilized to basically drive them crazy, whistleblowers, and a lot of it being non-consensual experimentation. He goes on to say how certain scientists would have been hanged back during the Nuremberg trials for what they're doing today, and they're getting away with it.
Gotcha. So it started in that area. And by the way, when you talk about it, when it started, who is doing this? You know, in other words, who is doing this abuse? Who is in charge of these types of technologies? Is it the military? Is it government? Is it private companies and private agencies? Do you know who's doing it?
We know the research has been done by the intelligence services, both military and the CIA, and in foreign countries, mainly military intelligence services. Whether or not it has been privatized, we don't know exactly. We have heard to some sources say that it has not, but we can't be sure of that, basically.
Okay, and when you have a victim who, like you said, they told you the script, and so you are well aware at your organization that they are a target. Do these individuals have any particularly interesting background? These types of citizens, the target.
Some do, and some don't. And basically, I think there are different reasons for becoming a target. In some cases, which is the minority, it would be people who have a background in military intelligence, or either whistleblowers or demonstrators. That is a minority, but in these cases, it's very clear why they became a target. But the majority of victims we don't have. They are basically ordinary citizens, housewives, etc. And we are pretty sure that this is just experimentation, like they did experimentation under the MKUltra program and all the other research programs. And it's basically just to pick people out randomly and to give the whole project a plausible deniability. Because the first question you will be asked if you ever talk to a skeptic is, why you? And that's exactly why. It's because if they pick people randomly, there is no particular reason why they are victims of this.
No method to the madness. How many, I don't know if you call them members or the people that you work with, I don't know what you refer to them as, but how many people have you contacted?
Well, I've been in contact with the hundreds in Europe, and people we've worked with are all kinds of people. You know, we do get some help from different agencies, different whistleblowers, etc. But the majority, except for Barry Trower, they don't want to come forward. So the information we get cannot be verified, and we cannot use it.
Oh, so that's a shame.
Yeah, it is. But it does point us in some cases to in directions we need to go. Mm-hmm.
How many people are in all has the organization, because I know when you were getting started, you had already contacted, reached, I know we broadcasted it, about 10,000 people. So where are you at now? How many people have you, you know, run through since you opened up ISACT?
Yeah, we're looking at about here in the United States who have actually gone through the testing. You're looking at about 1,500 people that I've been in contact with. Speaking to worldwide, you know, it's in the tens of thousands. That's one thing. But I wanted to touch on something. You asked who specifically. If we look at the statistics, not only what we have done, but other organizations have been done by a couple of individuals who had their hands on it. A gentleman by the name of Terry Robertson out of Kansas City, Missouri. He's a physician. Dr. John Hall, and some other organizations through Freedom, if you look at their statistics, it really points to non-consensual experimentation to the majority of people. I can tell you this, when I was in Washington, D.C., I was invited there, and all the group of people that we encountered there, 99% of them were former employees of military subcontractors. What was interesting in that group, we started doing some additional testing because there is a common theme for those who are most affected by this type of terrorism. is they tend to have a certain personality trait. And they claim about people saying they're driving and all of a sudden they're asleep, they don't remember a thing. Or at night, certain things happen throughout their house, they don't know how the doors open. But we demonstrated how easy it was, as long as they were subjected to what I call embedded commands, how you can put someone to sleep just by talking to them and give them a command and they won't remember. We demonstrated this with individuals there in Washington, D.C. I met with a couple of people that work for the Department of Defense, and we showed them the evidence, and they could identify when these microchips were being implanted in people, and they would actually say, well, that's older technology, this was being done in the 90s. But if you're dealing with today's technology, it's going to be almost impossible to detect, because we're dealing with what's called fiber RIDs, which are basically a hair's width in size, and it would be very difficult to pick up on a medical image. But if it's frequency based, it would be easy to be picked up on equipment that's specifically made to pick up RF frequencies. And that leads into, Roxy, when we last were on your show, we were doing the preliminary scanning, and we were able to phase three, where we were allowed, and we can't disclose the facility because we promised that we would keep that a secret, but we do have the video of the testing, and we were allowed to do the testing in a Faraday cage, which is a controlled environment. It was rated at 9 kilohertz and 18 gigahertz. And we had a control group, and in that control group were former political people. And when we did the frequency testing and put the frequency counters up to them, it read zero in the Faraday cage. But those who participated, and we had people from all over the globe there, those who were positive in the preliminary scans, what was interesting there is when we put the frequency counters up to them in the areas that they came up positive, there were frequencies detected within the range that the Faraday cage was rated to block out. Now, that spoke volumes. You know, in light of the other things that have developed, where we've been able to record the audio emission utilizing Doppler, we have a couple of cases where the surgical procedure is being performed. So we've come a long ways. And so for those who believed it was science fiction, you know, science fiction has now become science fact. And this is happening to many, many people. And the implications, if you look at Obamacare, there are certain language in it in which it allows for the subdermal implantation of a radio frequency device. And the issue here is people are not being told of the dire consequences and the horrible negative attributes that could be done to someone when they're subjected to this.
Oh, my. Now, you rolled out phase three testing in October of 2012. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And was that the October? Was that the first time that you conducted some of the testing?
In a controlled environment, yes.
In a controlled environment. Okay, so that was the first time in the Faraday cage. Okay, and from this, what are you doing? Because obviously you're going to continue testing in this manner, correct?
We are definitely going to continue. Where we need to really find cooperation is here in the United States. There are a couple of court cases that are moving through the court systems, where the research facilities and medical facilities have attempted to have the cases thrown out but have been unsuccessful because the judge is actually siding with the victim. And this is unprecedented, because every other opportunity we've had in the past, they've always been thrown out. And this is not happening in this case. We had a court order to allow us to do the testing within a Faraday cage at universities, and the universities have not been forthcoming in cooperating with us. And we feel, and it's just speculation here, is that it has to do with a lot of the funding that comes to these universities within these types of research technology fields is through the federal government.
Yeah, they kind of own them, don't they? So they're backing away from it so they don't get their funding cut.
And that is correctly and precisely the reason where we were allowed to do the testing in Europe, that was their biggest concern too, as they were concerned about losing millions and millions of dollars in research contribution that they had contracts for. But in this case, they did the right thing. They were more concerned about the well-being of the individuals that this was being done to, and allowed us to continue what we needed to have done. So my fight this year, 2013, for ISA Act is to make sure that we can build or find a manufacturer who is willing to work with us where we can do this here in the United States.
Okay, and do any laws need to change in order for you to do that, or is this going to be strictly finding a university or certain doctors that know how to do the testing or can be trained and want to volunteer or what have you? What's it going to take, Jesse, for you to be able to test in the United States? I think that's a very important move.
Yeah, what it's going to take is just to have the right facility to do this in. We, without disclosing too much information, let's just use the word Faraday cage for now. We basically need a controlled environment that is rated at a specific frequency spectrum, that it's rated to block out, so that when we're inside of that environment, that theoretically those frequencies should not be detectable within it, unless the emission is coming from within that particular environment. So we have been working with manufacturers who are willing to donate at cost the materials. We do have the blueprints, and we do have the engineers who are willing to build it with us. So it would be a matter of having the funds. Or there are some manufacturers who do work in this type of field who possibly we could lease those environments from. So that's what we're looking into now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And are you going to continue doing the testing in Europe as it stands then until you can get testing happening in the U.S.?
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
Basically, I'm a bit grounded in Denmark at the moment, so European victims would have to come to visit me. Oh. And some are. So I'm getting from Britain, I'm getting people coming over this weekend. So, but that's I'm grounded to Denmark at the moment, so okay. I'm not traveling around anymore.
Okay, so maybe it's slowing down a little bit because people have to come to you, and that's going to eliminate a lot of people who can't make it to Denmark.
Yeah, unfortunately.
In Europe, okay, all right, and so I guess I really are you doing anything? Your organization doing anything to raise money to make some more, more possibilities for victims? Have you done any of that?
No, everything has been pretty much on the backs of Lars and I. In 2013, though, we are in the works of creating a couple of events this year specifically for those purposes to further either build those particular environments that we can have in a portable modality where we can drive across large geographic areas where we don't have to have people flown into one location. That's one idea. Or the alternative is if we find a location, then we'll have to fly those individuals then. We would like to do everything at once, the preliminary scans and the scans within the control environment at the same time, and that would be ideal. And I think that's what takes so long currently is because we've had to do that. But here in the near future, I foresee that we can do everything at one time.
Correct. And when you're working with an individual and then you do find, for instance, this 2-minute tape that shows us. I mean, the sound of that is just horrible to begin with. I mean, I can't even imagine going 24/7 with. I'm not talking about tinnitus, people. I'm not talking about like a slight, you know, bothersome ringing in the ears. I'm talking about something screechy that's up and down and in velocity. I mean, it just, it's horrible. I don't even know how people think. But once you discover that that is being, quote unquote, emitted from that human being, have you found a way to make it stop?
At this point, no. We have found some ways to help people cope. We have found some ways to help people redirect their focus that helps them deal with the attack. But the only thing to really get it to stop is to have them removed.
Right, right. And then what you were saying, like if it's after 1990 or the 90s with the technology, you're dealing with something that's like a chip or what have you, a fiber RFID, as you said. How would you get it removed if it's not in a location that can be removed because you can't find it?
Well, basically, we had it's a bit of a tricky question. And also, I don't want to disclose the people involved. But when I went last year, I went around holding lectures. And the really good thing about that was I did get in contact with a lot of scientists who approached me afterwards, and I got a really good dialogue with a lot of scientists who are currently helping us out, also in Europe. And there's some very interesting progress going on, but for now they want to stay anonymous, and I think they should also stay anonymous because so they can be able to help us further. But let's say that this is worked on, and it has been figured out.
Oh, I love that. That's wonderful. That's fabulous. I'm glad to know that. I bet that's going to be a lot of hope for people as well, because I think in this situation, you know, this is, you mentioned MK Ultra earlier. I mean, you're talking about something in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, that people have had to deal with and commit suicide because they can't live one more day with this insanity and so forth. Now, as far as, let's go back a little bit to the experimentation aspect. I still am not fully understanding why they're experimenting on anyone. Okay, you quantified that earlier because there's no method to the madness kind of thing. If you just go after only ex-military, then it's going to be like, you know, then you're going to know the culprit. So, but because they are using just anyone from all over the world, you know, a mom, a grandpa, a young college kid, what have you, why? What's the bigger picture here? Why are they testing this junk, this abusive technology, this terrorizing individuals' technology? Why? What's the big picture? What do they need this for?
Well, my take is that there's a lot, much bigger cooperation between the intelligence services worldwide. And even if it's not the local intelligence service doing this, this is a tool for basically getting into any country, any segment of any country, mm-hmm. and really knowing what's going on the ground. Mm-hmm. What are people talking about on the streets? And for in the same basically goes for intelligence research purposes. This will basically enable them to help understand how the demographic in any country works, thinks, you know, how the languages are spoken, dialects are spoken.
What is the torture about, though? What's the torture? I don't understand the torture. I mean, you're talking about social civilization versus why are they torturing? I mean, seriously, are they just wanting to know what somebody does if they're bothered with this wave for 30 days straight? I mean, I don't get it.
Well, it could be a lot of, you know, there's a lot of post-traumatic stress and torture there's even science going on to how do we combat and fix that. You know, how stresses, how to put people under these torture programs and see how they, you know, cope with it. And then there's relief. There's actually a lot of emotions that people go through. And the more emotions you actually put free people through in the system, well, the more better research grounding you have, basically.
Okay, so are you saying that there's a possibility that the torture is being used, eventually it will pay off, and the few that are suffering right now will pay off later for the masses when they can discover all of these PTSD and all the rest of it and solutionizing? I still have a hard time grasping that.
Well,
let me interject just a little bit here. I think we can look back at, through history, and if we look at the Presidential Bioethics Commission that was appointed by President Obama to investigate whether non-consensual experimentation is still continuing to this very day, you have to ask, why would they be a need? If you look at the Tuskegee experiments they did, where they were infecting certain male populations with syphilis and letting it spread unchecked just to see what would happen, with no controls whatsoever. And then you have our president, President Clinton, come and apologize to Americans and said it's a real sad day in American history. And all they did was, you have to say, it exists. It's been done before, and it's continuing. If you look at the studies and the statistics that we're getting, it really points to that direction in the majority of the cases. But there are some cases that are very specific, and those specific cases are pointing to specific local law enforcement agencies and private investigation firms. So it has filtered into a segment of the private arena, but that may be more so that the majority, I believe the last statistic, Lars, correct me if I'm wrong, is over 80% of the military projects are privatized.
Yeah, in the U.S. at least. Mm-hmm. I just recently spoke to intelligence in Denmark, and they assured me that none of Danish intelligence has been privatized whatsoever. So I'm pretty happy with that.
Now, when you say military privatized, what do you mean?
Well, in the U.S., you have 17 different intelligence agencies, the CIA, the NSA, etc. Mm-hmm. And more than 80% of all of their work has been privatized, outsourced.
Even
to the extent where the president's daily briefing is written by private contractors. And you have CIA station chiefs around Europe and the world taking orders from private contractors. Mm-hmm. 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 So, but I think the U.S. is somewhat special there. I've been assured this is not the case in Europe.
Isn't? Oh my goodness! You really open up a can of worms. So, with that in mind, back to what is the purpose again of ISA Act as far as finding people who have been abused, then getting them tested? You're doing all of that. Are you creating a database, or is this very, very private underground information? Because I'm now wondering, if you can't do anything about it and this is all for the good of mankind, because it's really just research to help maybe some ex-military guys that come back with PTSD and all the rest of it because they've been through four or five tours in Iraq and they can't stand it and they're only 25 years old and they have children, they're going to go home and murder their wife and kids. There's more to this. Are you guys not telling us everything?
Well, basically.
Hey, welcome back. you're listening to the Truth and I Talk Radio again. And Jesse Beltran and Lars Studgard head up an organization called ISA Act. For you that are just tuning in, I was just reading some comments, and some of you didn't realize that the show started an hour ago. So here we go with time change. Arizona is a different state. We don't have daylight savings here. Anyway, International Center Against Abuse of Covert Technologies, if you're just joining us. And, you know, I do have a question. While we were getting, you know, discussing the how and why certain people get chosen to be studied, experimented on. And if you missed the first hour, we just really can't get right back into that because we've just got to keep moving forward. But you gave me a video today, Jesse, and maybe you can explain something. What is the race for the brain? What is this all about? It's really scary looking.
Actually, I'll let Lars go ahead and do the introduction on that, and then we can make some comments about issues that were brought forth through this video.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, when I went to Norway, to Oslo, and held a lecture there, and Norway is the neighboring country of Denmark. I met up with some victims as well, and they provided me with this Norwegian state television documentary. And it's about the brain implant research that was done in Norway in the 60s. So it's again, it goes back to MKUltra and even earlier programs and military programs. And it basically showed that they had this one doctor who was doing research in behalf of the U.S. on Norwegian patients, did 82 patients in the early 60s where he did brain implants. And he was very closely collaborating with a guy like Jose Delgado, who was working for the Americans as well. But his research was much more elaborated than Delgado's was. And the way he was chosen was actually he was a former OSS agent. And after the war, he came to the U.S. and got his medical training in the U.S., became a neuroscientist, and went back to Norway where they didn't have to consent. The patients didn't have to consent to anything like that. So he used psychiatry to do all of those U.S. military experiments on patients. And you have to realize that both Norway and Denmark were countries where they had a great portion of the MKUltra research programs going on. In Denmark alone, we had 500 victims who were completely had their lives destroyed. That was the LSD experiments. And the same in Norway. They also had 500 victims of this LSD experiments. And according to Colin Ross' book, The CIA Doctors, Denmark was the leading country in brain implants. But they have not no material has actually been revealed in Denmark on that, but the Norwegian version of this is basically what we see in this video.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean brain implants and brains from who and planted into where?
Well, basically that this was electronics that is implanted into the brain to transmit signals to people and control them. And this is what the video is about. But he was also the one neuroscientist who was doing all of the research on all American astronauts and on all of the U-2 spy plane pilots. He was choosing all the U-2 spy plane pilots. And you have one very interesting section there where you have a Norwegian Air Force captain who is now at the museum in Norway where they had the U-2 spy plane. And he claims that all this, the pilots of these spy planes were actually remotely monitored by the system, and they were also able to influence them mentally on a remote distance, even when they were flying in the U-2 spy planes around the world.
Really?
Yeah. So that's why it's important, even though it's in the early 60s. And what it shows is basically what they were able to do in the early 60s. So it doesn't take much to see, you know, how that's, you know, 50 years ago.
So this is in the 60s, it was the brain electrode implants. And mm-hmm. you've already proven that was done. Those experiments were done. And obviously on people that had no idea, right? I mean, consent is what I'm saying.
Without consent. This is non-consensual experimentation. What's sad about this story is there's a gentleman with the last name of Erling who came out and was complaining and voicing this concern. He kept saying that Jacobson had implanted him with these antennas, and he kept trying to remove them. And Erling wouldn't be quiet about the story. He kept telling people. And what eventually happened is they used psychiatry to control him and him, and eventually they lobotomized him for telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. Lobotomized him. So is this man still alive?
We don't know. The documentary was done in 2000. So,
so we have. Well, if you had a lobotomy, you're not. And the lobotomy issue is, you know, I think that that has – that's unprecedented as well. But there has been, you know, a lot of – a lot of news about that, a lot of media coverage years after, you know, Nazi Germany, you know what I mean? Because that is, apparently that's what they were working on there as well, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, crazy stuff, but lobotomy being one of them. So, interesting. Do you think that they're still doing lobotomies today? I mean, well, did they do a lobotomy to him in 2000?
No, I know that in Denmark, at least, we were the last country in the Western world to stop it, and it stopped in 86.
Okay.
So they, at least that's what they claim. But now yeah. they use medication to basically medicate people beyond, you know, to permanent sleep, or they fry people's brains with the electroshock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's new improved ways of doing it.
Yeah.
And that leads into what you were talking about. How is this torture? Mm-hmm. Specifically, if you can imagine, I don't know if you've ever, if you've been to physical therapy or where they use what's called a TENS unit, a transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulator. Basically, it's a machine that has electrodes, and they'll put patches on areas where you have pain or having ailments, and they'll induce electricity to give a type of therapeutic massage or contract a specific muscle. Now, if you can imagine these electrodes being implanted remotely and then someone turning on the switch instead of which would normally be therapeutic at a 2 or a 3, but turning it to a 10, what that would do to someone, it would contort you, it would contract you, it would cause excruciating pain. Unfortunately, this is the reality that happens to a lot of victims. And a lot of them can't tolerate it, and eventually we have many cases where they commit suicide. They just can't take it anymore. And then you put on the auditory effects that this causes, and you heard part of that today, Roxy. You kind of wonder what is this world really about? We're transitioning in an era in technology where being human and having the right to be free is really being impeded upon and taken away. And today our hot topic is terrorism. I've said this before. If terrorism is something that we're really serious about, then this is the ultimate form of terrorism, where you're torturing people. We speak up and we are in disgust of what happened in Nazi Germany to the Jews, but now it's happening across the board to all races. I see all races across the board that this is destroying, and this is really where it's going to.
Yes, it appears to be so, and it's absolutely beyond horrific. I mean, it's this is a very disturbing topic, and I'm sure that many who are listening. By the way, a lot of people are asking about wanting to call in the show, and I had promised people that they could call in the second hour, so. If you don't mind, would you like to take a couple of calls if they come in?
Sure, I don't mind.
Okay. So if you want to call in the show, people, it's 347-688-3902. And we'll take a few of your calls if you have any questions for Lars Drudgard or Jesse Beltran. Now, you brought up the TENS unit, and yes, I know all about a TENS unit. I used one for over 4 years when I had my my leg was amputated in a car accident. And anyways, a long story, they did put my leg back together, and it was many years and many different operations, let's say. But I used a TENS unit, and what's funny when you're talking about this, I actually did turn mine up to 10. But here's the difference. I would put it on 3, then 4, then 5, you know what I mean, over time. And when you did turn it up to 10, it stings. It's like this, like a lot of different little pins, and they kind of sting, but that pain felt better than the pain that I was feeling from the actual injury of a crushed leg. So I would just turn it up above my thigh and just focus on that. I don't think people in general do that. But there's also another, there's a clinic that uses this methodology as well, a similar to the TENS unit. I don't know if any of you ladies out there know about this, but to lose weight and to make muscles get, exercise. And what they do is they lie you down on a table, and it's a salon technique, and they put like little TENS units on little round caps all over your body, and then they turn it up. And when they do that, all those muscles contract, and it's really, really annoying. And they put them mostly in your stomach area and your hips and your thighs. And I actually tried it out once, even though it had nothing to do with me. I wanted to see what it was like. And they put it on a very low frequency. So I don't know if any, like I said, any ladies out there who've ever done this, and you don't have to tell me about it, but just think about that. So I can't imagine what you have mentioned, something inside the human body that triggers like that anytime on 10, because what it does do, which you said the magic words there, it contracts the muscle. And when you have a muscle that just contracts without you knowing that that's going to happen to you, it is absolute torture. Absolute torture. And then the tape that you played, sent to me today as well, that's beyond. I mean, I can't imagine having my muscles contract and this wave of different octaves just screeching in my head 24/7. No, I cannot imagine it. I think it's absolutely wrong. So my next question is, when you are you ever going to bring this up in court? Are you ever going to have enough victims that you can start to take, the only thing I can think of about a court hearing would be not only to try to convict maybe who's doing this, but to get whoever invented it to stop doing it, I guess. I guess that would be my motive.
Well, of course, that's our objective. You know, mm-hmm. Right now there's a couple of cases that are moving through the court systems. And because I am a witness that's being summoned in one of the cases, some things I can't really divulge at this time, but that we are moving that way. And the bottom line is, you know, through ISA Act, we've completely tackled it from an objective manner. We have many, many attempts to discredit what we're doing, but we stay and are resolved, and we push forward, and we keep just making sure we're smart about how we're moving forward. So that is happening, will happen. And I plan on seeing this justice being brought against the terrorists in my lifetime. Section 802 of the U.S. Patriot Act defines using electronics in a way to coerce, to harm a population, or to even change or manipulate the population is considered terrorism. So under the Patriot Act, this needs to be prosecuted in that way, and we have to hold all the terrorists accountable.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I applaud what you're doing, absolutely. I think anybody could absolutely be behind, you know, get behind you, for sure. When it comes to these individuals that you are working with, I guess I want to ask a psychological question of both of you. Does this get to you some days when you're dealing with somebody who's really who is a target, and you've already proven it, and you're working with them, trying to discern, what's happening to them. Is this hard to do? I mean, being that Jesse, you're working with about 1,500 people, and Lars, hundreds. Doesn't this get to you, too?
It is trying. But I think my background as a paramedic, you know, part of what we do is listen, assess, We hear the subjective complaints, which is basically what they say they're feeling. And then we look for the objective data, which is things that we can tangibly assess and say, yes, that's reality. So that part of my background does help. But it does wear at you, because you, a lot of times, what ISACT is about, we're strictly about, we want the data, we want the evidence, we want to make sure that we're bulletproof when we go to fight this battle, as we continue to fight it. But victims love to tea, and I understand that. But sometimes,
I'm sorry, you cut out. What did you just say, Jesse? You just totally cut out. What did you say?
Okay. I say victims love to tell their story. They want someone to hear them. They want someone who relates to them and understands what they're going through. And I definitely do that. But there are so many victims, and there's only a few of us who are doing what we're doing. And so, unfortunately, we have to sometimes say, you know, I really need to move on. We need to find out, you know, what are your physical symptoms? What is it that you think or feel that we can do for you? And we do this completely voluntary. We are doing this because we're looking for a specific objective, and that's the evidence. And that's what we're about. But it does wear on you. If we listen to every subjective story out there, I can tell you, one person can keep you on the line for 3-4 hours. And if we did that with everyone, there wouldn't be enough time in the day to be as productive as we have been. And we've only been around for a short couple of years. And wow, where we were back then and where we are today is just incredible.
And congratulations on that. I can imagine that someone wants to tell their story. Look, the amount of email that I get for you guys, I get tons. As a matter of fact, I had 3 or 4 of them just today. Some people are now posting on the Truth Denied's website. And by the way, if you want to check out some of their work, Jesse's work and Lars' work with ISACT, and it's all linked up on the homepage of thetruthdenied.com. I forgot to mention that. But, you know, they write me, and they're desperate, and they're telling – some people have written me maybe 2 or 3 paragraphs, very long paragraphs. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm just the middleman. I'm just the person to let you know. And then some people write me many, 20 paragraphs, and then they'll write 5 or 6 times a day. So I do understand they want to tell their story to somebody. They want somebody to understand. And it must be lonely out there when you're a targeted individual and you've not met any other targeted individuals in your lifetime. It must be pretty lonely. That must be tough.
Yeah, you have to understand that part of this script is to isolate people from their surroundings.
So
it is basically people who are completely isolated. And they are isolated from family, from friends, alienated completely. And I don't have Jess's background as a paramedic. So I think for me it's probably a bit tougher. And I wasn't really born with this Florence Nightingale kind of approach to things. So I do get annoyed sometimes. You know, I've heard the story thousand times, and that's just, you know, a human flaw that I have, like everybody else. And one thing that really is annoying me at the time is that I do understand that when people are tortured and victimized in this case, like this, they just want to get rid of it. So at the moment, I'm getting flooded with emails of basically take this away, like it would be ordering a pizza or something. And that's not where the point we're at. And then people just have to understand that this is a long process of trying to gather the evidence, and then there will be an even longer process basically of bringing this through the court systems. So it's not about just, you know, contacting us and say take this away.
You know, I think that's across the board with anything. you know, environmentally, all the activists, you know, they think that we can just sign a petition and it's all going to go away. And it's a process just like anything else. And I agree with you on that. Absolutely. And I have to say what I think is very interesting right now. Remember, I mentioned to you guys that I got some emails today, people who wanted to talk to both of you. And I find it very interesting that earlier in the chat, you know, they were drumming up and they wanted to talk. And I promised everybody that, you know, that they'd get to speak with you. And it's very interesting because now we have absolute silence. The number is 347-688-3902. We're not going to bite you. You can call in. You can talk to Jesse and Lars. These are the individuals that you want to talk to. But I find it interesting that they've gone all quiet now that we've opened up that phone line for them. So I invite you to come in. You can hear Jesse and Lars are very nice people if you want to talk to them. But furthermore, on the what's up for you next? Because you've got this stage three going and this new testing going, and you just did a big one, you know, in October. And so what is the more of the plans for 2013?
Well, I've got a big story right now.
Okay.
That we've kept under wraps. A couple of weeks ago, with the help of some other individuals and our couple members in ISA Act, we presented in front of the European Parliament. We had in attendance was Magnus Olsen, who has been a huge supporter, Dr. Ronnie Kilder. I don't know if you've heard her name before, but she can you give me the background? I forget. She's a physician. She was formerly associated with the World Health Organization. She was a chief medical officer for Sweden, correct, Lars?
No. She was a chief medical officer for Finland.
Finland.
Yeah. And she's married to a Norwegian diplomat, so she lives in Norway now.
Yeah. And we had some other individuals, Melanie Vachon, presented in front of them and gave a presentation and was well received. And they were in the works of having additional meetings with other human rights committees in the European Parliament, which is, in our perspective, a huge, huge opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. That is absolutely fabulous. And I love Melanie. She's, you know, been quite forward with her experience. And what a great gal. We've got a caller on the line for you both from 604. Welcome to the Truth and I Talk Radio. Our guests tonight are Jesse Beltran and Lars Drudgard. What can we do for you?
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's nice to talk to you, ma'am. Gentlemen, it's been a very interesting discussion. I have a couple of questions.
Well, fire away.
Good. Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
In general, have you tried using the electromagnetic frequencies available to you to try to cancel out this particular transmission?
Welcome back. So the caller that's just called in is asking the question if the EMF can also be used to cancel out that radio frequency signal. Is that correct? Is that the question?
Yes, ma'am, or any other form of sound canceling.
Okay.
No, we have not. And that particular method we've talked about. But really the only thing that we've really looked at to try to isolate it was shielding. And when I was up in Washington, D.C., I was in an environment only because of the persons we were with who had access in an environment that did shield the frequency. And then that's about the only thing that we've tried at this point. I know Lars has a background in the subject matter. And we've talked about this, and we're trying to devise a very effective way in which we could possibly test it. But we really need the controlled environment to do further testing.
Okay. So it's got a handshake. It's coming and going, right?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Turning on to something interesting, but before I do, have you heard of Mr. Hutchison? The
yes, we have.
Okay. Boy, I would recommend him highly if he can. You could consult with him. The last thing we're going to say is somewhat unusual, but when I hear high-frequency noise like that, I think back at it at a out-of-tune, out-of-phase hum or high cycle buzz, whatever you want to call it. You know what I'm talking about, tinnitus type stuff, but not tinnitus. You know how you can recognize them because they spring out of nowhere, right? And a machinery buzz will continue until somebody shuts it off. But the really irritating ones I just beam back at, and they shut off. So try affecting it with your mind. Maybe it'll work.
It's funny you should mention that. Part of my background is a practicing hypnotist. And what we've found is that a lot of the victims who are most affected tend to be or tend to score very high on a suggestibility test. And those who are probably in the most dangerous zone tend to fall into a category of what we would call somnambulism, which basically means you're 100% suggestible. Now think about that. If you're able to transmit, and Roxy, you'll appreciate this even more in light of what we discovered today, with that digital code being embedded in that the sound bite that we sent you of what we recorded from that basically the foreign body emitting that frequency. Now, if you're able, and you're the gentleman who called me.
Yeah, this is SJ. My name is SJ.
Okay. If you think about
that. Want to try something really cool?
Yeah. Can I finish this out real quick, though?
Please do.
Yeah. If you think about that, he said that this is embedded in that frequency that's being transmitted. There's something in NLP or neuro-linguistic programming, or you can use it in hypnosis, when someone's in an altered state, you can embed commands in which you're using normal language, but you're actually giving them commands to do something else. Now, if you think about what he said, embedded in that frequency is some type of code. Now, if you're sending this to someone at a and their subconscious is interpreting it and acting upon that, think about the ramifications that can be done.
Well, yeah. I have. I've been following this particular area of mind manipulation for a long, long time, and I don't think I'm current with what's really out there, but I've caught quite a bit of what people have talked about. You want to try something really interesting?
What are you gonna, what would you suggest there, SJ?
I would like him to think of me as a think at me. Right, currently he's got this tinnitus like ring in his ears, right? Yeah. Why don't you think at me a second and let me see if I can think back at you and change it? Just 10 seconds, 15, a short period. You ready? Okay, go. That should have had some effect if it would have any.
Yeah, well, there is a it's hard to tell because there's a technique that we teach people to cope. And is if you focus your mind on something or a specific task other than what you're experiencing, it will diminish the effect or the symptoms that you're having in most cases, not in all the cases. So it's hard to tell. Because I would be focusing on something else at this point.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
And over the phone, no less.
Yes.
I hope you get a chance.
On a radio show.
Yeah, no less. Thank you so much for, first of all, telling us about it. I wish we could help you. I hope we meet sometime and we could try that face-to-face and might actually be able to pull something off. I think we are exploring new limits. New versions and new interpretations of everything around this. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the call, SJ. We really appreciate it.
You betcha.
Alrighty. Have a good night. So Now he mentioned Dr. Hutchinson. Who's Dr.? Why does that name sound familiar?
Well, Hutchinson was originally out of Canada. He's a self-taught physicist who deals with microwave frequencies, and he's able to affect matter in ways are against what conventional physics has taught us, like levitating steel cannonballs and levitating water, ice cream, making them transparent, turning them into exotic metals that we're not familiar with. If you Google him and you watch what he's done, it is pretty amazing. It's very fascinating. He was also interviewed, interestingly enough, on a show, and I'm not sure if I can mention it on your radio show.
Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Okay. I believe recently Jesse Ventura did an episode about the Gwin Towers, and I guess I don't use the word or identify with the word targeted individuals. Mm-hmm. But Richard Hutchinson was interviewed with regards to the capability of the inventions that he does, and he works with microwave frequencies and the sort. It's pretty amazing what he does. But he's now a U.S. He's now in the United States. I believe he's in Michigan.
Wow.
So we would love the opportunity to meet him.
I see. It's interesting because Lars just Skyped and said the Hutchinson effect. And as soon as he said that, I said, oh, yes, that now I know. Yeah. So, yes, I am familiar because, I don't know what's happened as far as you guys getting in touch with somebody like that. But I don't think that would be too hard to do.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I feel strongly that he would have great insights considering mm-hmm. what we're dealing with. Yeah, yeah.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And again, if you are looking for ICAACT's website, that's ICAACT. That has been dropped into the chat room a few times. It's also linked on the homepage of thetruthdenied.com, and of course we'll be doing a video and an article of the show with any the new information and so forth that you guys have to put out and so forth, and we always keep track of what you're doing as much as we can. The next and by the way, congratulations on being together for a couple of, like you said, short years, and made so much progress. Amazing progress, and how discerning you both have been, Lars and Jesse. I bet you there are a lot of people out there that are very grateful to have met the both of you, for sure.
Well, it's not about that. When we have our meetings with our membership, really, it's about finding a solution for everyone who's suffering. I strongly believe that we need to really, although we really need to put ourselves behind the back burner and think about the ultimate goal, the big picture here. And the big picture here is that we need to stop the terrorism. If we don't stop it, what is the future for our children, our grandchildren, our children's grandchildren, and so forth? And what type of life does that give them? We're now entering an aspect of society where we're going to have to redefine being human if this continues.
What do you mean by that?
If you look at where the technology is going, mm-hmm. Where you now can control software just by thought. And you have to wonder how is that possible? There are certain software companies out there that do demonstrations where all you do is put on a headset and you can levitate a chair. You can think about it disappearing. You can manipulate the screen without ever saying a word. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I don't know. But if you're able to do this, then what does it mean? the question asked all the time is, can someone then intercept your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, if we're dwelling into that arena, not to move away from the topic, but if we go into that arena, what does privacy mean anymore? When every aspect of what you do, what you see, what you feel is being broadcasted, because that's exactly where the technology is going. Remember, we're always about 20 to 40 years ahead of what is being dispersed to society. I was up in Seattle, and I was in the Intel facility because we had a personal relationship with someone there. And there is a room there that's 20 to 40 years in the future. And its basis is upon biometrics. You're interfacing with your environment just by thought. You're manipulating things just by thought. Is that where we want to go? With great progress in technologies like that, there are some serious consequences, and the consequences are not being told. And the reality is that this is affecting a lot of these victims in a very negative way. Lars and I guess are blessed in some aspects that we're functional, but most victims are not. I've seen doctors who've had million-dollar businesses completely destroyed because they just couldn't cope or didn't possess the ability to learn the coping mechanisms that we have learned.
And that's really
there's
sad.
A lot to be seen here. Yeah.
And when you talk about privacy like this, listeners, we're talking about a bigger privacy breach here than could ever be. You know, I thought remote viewing was a big privacy breach, you know. And, you're discussing now synthetic biologies, robotics, the ability to, walk through walls and see through walls. And this is, there's the good part, like when they bring home a soldier from a war and they have these latest techniques and replacement parts for the body, the human body now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wonderful, that now somebody can run in the Olympics when they don't have two legs anymore, So there's parts of this that are okay. But when you talk about the human mind, it gets a little tricky. And if you're building a computer brain for a human brain in exchange, this is where it really gets debatable. Like, we're becoming robots or these particular individuals. And in the transition of it, like you said, people commit suicide because it's just they don't have the tools to combat to deal with what is happening to themselves. And doesn't sound futuristic, but I know what you mean when you say this word. It sounds so debilitating. It sounds so Frankenstein.
Yeah, but again, what you have to imagine is that the military intelligence services are like 20, 30 years ahead. Mm-hmm. And there are political decisions made on when this is going public. And this recent article here in the New York Times basically describes that Obama has ordered a lot of this brain stuff going public now. And if the scientists are not up to the job, he even assigned the DARPA researchers to the project as well. So it will go public. And I just want to mention something. It's a bit... I just finished reading a book second time now by a very controversial person. It's the former intelligence czar, Richard A. Clarke. He wrote a book in 2007 called Breakpoint. It's a fictional novel, and it ends with basically the... If I should quote it, some truths are both best told in fiction.
Right, of course. Yes, of course.
Yeah. That's the scary version of what's going on.
And when Lars was giving his presentations at the Open Your Mind conference, both in Denmark and in Stockholm, he demonstrated that it sounds like futuristic and science fiction, but there are cases where we're actually integrating biological material with computer circuitry. And the one that comes to mind is where they use actual neurons from a rat's brain and grew them on the circuitry and able to get it to function.
I know. I've seen that.
Yeah. And this is happening. I mean, this is the transhumanism that's going on. You look at the Presidential Bioethics Commission, which I've talked about earlier on February 3rd in San Francisco. I was there to you know, they believe that we are not capable of thinking for ourselves, that 99.9% of the population does not know what's good for them and what's the better good. It's the term that they use. And Amy Gutman said it point blank, and it's on video, that the 0.1% will make the decisions for the 99.9%. All of our rights, HIPAA laws, confidentiality is to be thrown out the window. They want to turn the entire globe into a giant lab, and that's where we're going.
That's, you know, that's really beyond. I have nothing to say right now. I mean, you've done it. You've done it. I'm a host of a radio show, and I'm tongue-tied right now because it's scary. It's not. It's disturbing. This is really disturbing. I mean, what should we do? I mean, seriously, because, you know, I heard a show on Coast to Coast the other night. I don't know if you guys listened to it, but it was about this. The whole show was about this, and it was a guy that's, you know, come forward and expose. You know, he's a victim as well, and gathering up other victims. And the bottom line here is that he was saying that don't have a surgery, don't have dental work, don't have, you know, the minute you're put under, boom, they slip in one of these, you know, fiber RFIDs, and you're done because you won't know you've got it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I mean, and that show was very disturbing, gentlemen, as well. And people that called into that show were saying the same thing. This is a really disturbing topic because you don't know if you're having this being done to you. You don't know if you're a target. You don't know if it's little by little by little that you're changing. Or what about GMOs and foods? What if they're trying to change our DNA? What if that's part of the transhumanism mutation that we all need to go through so that they can continue to experiment with? I mean, this gets really, really ugly.
It's worse than that. I mentioned the meeting on February 3rd of the Presidential Bioethics Commission. First off, the subject of experimentation and consent was a huge topic. Their basis was this, is that they eventually want to own the information of everyone's DNA on this planet. And that information they want to patent. And then the topic of, then who owns you? That's where it's going. So your rights are going to be taken away because someone owns the information of your DNA. Is that really where we want to be as a human society? I don't know. I sure know that I don't want it that way. I don't want it for my children and my grandchildren.
Yeah. And I think what we really have to address is the politicians and their responsibility and denying to take responsibility for what's going on and keeping the secret from the people. We recently had a few intelligence scandals in Denmark. This has led to the parliament creating new laws and oversight. Basically, Denmark is the country in the Western world with the least oversight over its intelligence community. And there was a big debate, and the politicians finally ended up telling the world that they are now creating some oversight, but it was painfully obvious to every single individual in Denmark that what they really did was they didn't change a thing. They really don't want to know what's going on. They know it's so bad that they cannot, as politicians, afford to know what's going on in the intelligence community. And I think no Dane is doubting that. That this is the case. The politicians don't want to touch the intelligence services and definitely don't want to know what's going on. And we have, in the US, you have William Binney and other whistleblowers testifying to the same thing, that the American politicians don't really want to know. But it's the, ultimately, it's their responsibility, and we have to seriously question our politicians on that. That's my take.
Yeah. And we have 21 states with laws against non-consensual RFID implantation. Senate Bill 362 here in California. The strange thing is that initially it was a misdemeanor, and then over the years it was watered down as just a civil penalty. That's a spank on the hand, a wrist. It means nothing. So we need to stand together. We need to band together. We need to say enough's enough. Where's the breaking point where here in the United States, American citizens just can't be pushed anymore and demand change or create the change themselves?
Have we lost you, Roxy?
I think we did, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yeah. There
okay.
You go.
Wow, thanks for – I was like, oh, my God, I'm talking. They can't hear me. Nobody can hear me. But what I was asking is the idea that whether – the government has turned its back on us, or certain senators and congressmen know, and certain congressmen and women don't know, and what have you. And as far as what you were just mentioning, you know, a civil penalty, slap on the hand now. And obviously, that's all part of this. It's all part of stripping it away before we even notice. And then it's, you know, the transparency is there. And I think that, you know, we have a lot of transparency already just via the internet. I mean, we have a lot of transparency on us already.
Yes, that's true.
We the people, you know, and you've got cyber stalkers, and you've got cyber, you know, people who steal you, your name and so forth, and steal your identity and what have you. And then, I mean, that's been going on for 20 plus years. But at this point, and this is where, you know, again, crossing over the line, have you heard of somebody wrote in and told me that they're taking the placenta now for when you have a newborn baby? And the doctor is taking that placenta immediately, and they don't need your consent to take the placenta. Are you aware of this?
I haven't heard that, but it wouldn't surprise me. What would surprise me is there are certain cultures that demand or require that they take it home with them. So I'd be curious to investigate whether those cultures are being affected by that, if that is the case that's happening. So I'm not sure.
Apparently, it's used for testing, and it's used for DNA for the child.
I can tell you in Denmark, we have, since 1972, they are taking the DNA of every newborn child.
Okay, there you go. And what's the reason?
Well, basically, they're claiming it's research. But the problem is, so it's not immediately available to the intelligence and police, but at some point down the road, you could imagine them requiring.